Hello, everyone. Space Cafe Podcast. Marcus here. This is an unusual episode, my friends, and I'm allowing myself an unusual beginning. Now, this is a little personal. Don't we all have secret desires, strange episodes, thoughts that we are afraid of? I'm having such an episode right now, I feel, and it has been going on for quite a while now. I feel suspended over this huge trench that COVID-19 tore open, and I do not know what to do. Should I go out into the world and embrace everyone? At a distance of 1 meter, of course, and share my joy with them? My joy that COVID-19 keeps us physically at a distance but produces quality of life in a way that many of us have never experienced before? Or should I go out and cry with all those who have lost their jobs, with the artists and the creative people? Or even worse, should I cry with those who have lost someone they love to the virus? Should I fear for my job, or should I embrace the void and propose new ideas? Is this finally the moment to speak our minds and press for long overdue reforms? I do not know. I'll just have to hang in there, I guess, literally, between the gaping walls of the big COVID-19 trench. And what does all this have to do with the Space Cafe? Maybe nothing, but maybe everything. Space is out there. It's vast. It's immeasurable. And it gives us hope. It is that new El Dorado, that place of longing, or whatever you may call it in your cultural background. That place of longing that man has always needed to give his life meaning. We are in the middle of a new space age. At least since the successful Crew Dragon mission, it is clear the ships are ready. Set the sails. For the next steps, we will need all our strength and every visionary thoughts available to make our human dreams become a reality. Therefore, dear listener, I'm especially pleased to have a very special guest with me on the show today. Our guest is not from space, not from the space industry, or from above, and therefore has a very refreshing view on it. Our guest is a partner in one of the most renowned architectural firms in the world, Foster and Partners, that is, the brainchild of Sir Norman Foster. The list of milestones in architecture that this office has under its belt is impressive. Wembley Stadium in London, Spaceport America in the United States, the futuristic city of Masdar City in the United Arab Emirates, the German Reichstag, the Apple spaceship in Cupertino, and so on and so forth. And what does an architect do when everything has already been achieved on Earth? Right, they look up. There is room, there is challenge, there is the future. Maybe, but not so fast. But not so fast. Our guest today sees solutions to our earthly mayhem up in space, but not the way you might imagine it now. Dear listener, please welcome with me one of the most exciting personalities we have had in the Space Cafe podcast so far. Enjoy. So, everyone, now with me on the show is Roxy Rahel Gülmeister, that is, right? Is that the right pronunciation?
Yes, that's a funny name, right?
That's a very funny name, but you know what? The cool thing is that we both share funny names because we share the same native language, that is German, or I should rather say Austrian, in my case. In your case also, right?
No, I'm German actually, but I lived in Austria a decade long.
Okay, so there's a difference between German and Austrian German, dear listeners. A severe difference. So some Germans don't understand Austrians and the other way around, but it's the same language still. So Roxy Rahel, is that your middle name or is this a made up name?
So my full first name is Roxelane Rahel. So this is a double one.
Wow, that sounds so awesome.
But Roxy is easy.
It's easier
and
to.
Nice.
You know, Roxy, that your middle name reminds me of Herman Melville's Moby Dick. Apart from the main plot, there was a ship that roamed the seas for lost seamen, fallen prey to the wild chase for whales. The ship was called Rahel, and it was somewhat a tragic witness to the mad hunt for the white whale. Did you know that?
I didn't hear of that, but the first one, Roxelane, is having an equally cool story, which is a woman who managed to come from a very rural background and marry the emperor of the Osman Empire. And then she got really, really powerful. So it's a very, very cool story, actually. So I'm happy with what I got, even though first name and last name don't perfectly match.
All right. Roxy, let's move back in time a little and take a look at how everything started out for you. You started at a technical university, Braunschweig. So you studied architecture. So that was a pretty traditional way to do things, I guess. You weren't the only one. Then you made the right decision and opted for an exchange year in Austria. Very good choice. You went to Vienna.
I went to Vienna while being on my way to Paris for an exchange year that I had agreed on. I just thought I'd have a look at Vienna as well. And then I thought I'll not move to Paris.
So you got stuck in Vienna.
Yes, for 5 years I had to... pleasure to learn from one of the most inspiring architects I ever met.
You studied at Zaha Hadid's studio, right?
Yes, she was my professor. So, and why I left traditional university education almost was because it felt so boring. It felt so not being part of the future or of the edge between today and tomorrow. So I looked around. I still wanted to do the architecture, but not the traditional way. And that brought me to apply in Vienna to study with Zaha, because with anything she was doing, she was pushing the boundaries of how we think a space should look like, of how we should design buildings, of how cities look like. So, and I especially loved the work scale between a vase and a city, and that you can sort of question everything, and that the meaning of studying is to question everything. And that made me stay in this place.
Nice, beautiful. And then the next line on my notes here read Foster and Partners. So please do tell me, how did that work out? Did Norman Foster call you and say, Roxy?
As many things in my life, I just have an idea and then I send an email and then I see what's going to happen. And that's exactly what happened. And then I flew to London and I had to do a few interviews because it's not easy at all. But I met fantastic...
Hold on. So you had the idea to be wanting to work with... Sir Norman Foster.
Yeah.
And then Roxy Rahel decided to write him an email. So what was it that you wrote?
Well, I wrote, which is very, very true, that I've followed his work for a long time. And what was drawing me to his side, he's very different than Zaha if you look at the style. But it's not only the style, it's the fundamental environmental agenda that is behind what he's doing. And that really struck me, and that really said, like, this is the place I need to be. And I was lucky to be able to convince them that they believed in that crazy lady from Austria.
So you got a reply from this guy in your inbox.
From the company.
And the inbox.
So basically I submitted a nice portfolio of works I had done before. I've worked in Vienna as well while studying. So I put all in and sent it, and I moved to London the night before the interview. Pouring rain the next morning. I didn't realize how long it takes to get from A to B in London. So I was basically running there. I did an interview. It was quite nice, but then quite silent again. But it's a big company. You need to convince more than one person to get you there. So I had another two interviews. And then finally, I got an offer when I was in Salzburg over Christmas. So I was like, yay, I'm moving to London.
Wow. So that was your Christmas present then?
Yeah. So that was somehow my wild plan worked out.
Incredible. Incredible. So when? So how long?
It's nothing wrong in just asking and telling them what you think you can contribute or try to contribute.
Thank you so much for that, because I think this is something we have completely forgotten to do, because many of us have been brought up to do what they're asked to do and not proactively bring new ideas into the world. And I think this is exactly what the world is looking for. So the strange thing is, in fact, the world would be happy to hear more proactive ideas, but we're perhaps too polite or brought up in the wrong way to take the first step. So
thank you. I've practiced that because I think sometimes I don't tend to think too much. Just start somewhere and see where that goes.
Wow. Thank you. There's another thing I really, really liked on your website, because you also design jewelry.
Yes, I do. That's one of the great things of 3D printing technology being available to everyone at any time. You can just print something and go out that night. And you can reprint it when you lose it, right? That's also helps.
Yes, yes, totally. No. A real artist throws away the algorithm because it should be unique. But no one does it, right? We all keep a backup copy.
Actually, a friend of mine got an... I met him in Zurich on a dinner, and we figured we both love 3D printing, just that they are printing rocket engines and I'm printing jewelry.
Wow.
So mm-hmm. he said he's going to propose to his girlfriend on a trip to Morocco. And if he was like, oh, I love your bracelet, can I get one of these? And I was like, yeah, you can order one. And he's like, how long does it take to be delivered? And I was like, well, maybe 2 weeks. He was like, no, I'm flying next week and I need this to propose, because also her story is 3D printing. And
wow.
then I just gave him my one and he took it to Morocco.
Wow.
And now I'm waiting for the
invitation for
the wedding.
Great. Does she know that it was yours?
Yes. She knows the whole story and it's fun.
Okay, Roxy, you're an architect. You are future-oriented. You're human-centered. The COVID-19 episode must be something like an ideal testbed for your visions, right? Because I believe that COVID has brought something like a rift to human society, a rift that separates what was before and what is to come. We do not know yet what is to come, but chances are that we're facing something entirely new. So architects and artists in general usually are somewhat on the forefront of things to come. So my question to you, Roxy, as an artist, as an architect, as a visionary, what do you think will come out of COVID-19?
That is a good question. I think one point is now is the best moment to push for a future that we want, because right now everything is in question, everything is up in the air, and there's a lot, even though there's a lot of crisis, also there's a lot of momentum and a lot of opportunity to do things differently. And maybe we will be able to have less physical presence, but more awareness and more real philosophical and more content presence still, but without harming the environment in a way we did before, which also applies to construction, especially that is eating up 40% of all global final energy. And if we do not all need to be in the same space, which we successfully prove right now, does this not allow us to make other choices? Maybe we want to have a farm as well in the afternoon. Maybe. And I really hope that this helps to balance between cities and land and rural areas, between different countries, between places that have this magnetism physically, like London, for example. But if no events happen, what am I doing there? Because that's what I came for in the first place. So I hope that everyone, the ones who are working, but also the ones who have the corporates, be more open to ideas and to suggestions and to do things differently, and also be mindful that there's another curve we have to flatten, not only the COVID infections, but climate change as well. And not voluntarily, we do a share of that right now by not flying around every week or multiple times a month, but by trying to connect it with technologies and develop technologies further that have been around already, but that we might have valued differently. And also that we value the spaces we have and we shape them and we take active ownership of what is surrounding us directly because we spend more time there now. That maybe sounds all very philosophical.
No, this is the right place to speak our minds about everything, and especially when it comes to philosophy. This is all very welcome here on. By the way, this is still a Space Cafe podcast on Spacewatch Global. Dear listeners, and this is Roxy Rahel Gülmeister. She is with Foster & Partners. You're an associate, right?
Yes.
Right. Foster & Partners, one of the go-to places when it comes to the greatest architecture the world has seen these days.
And the most sustainable, I have to say. That's the key. The key.
Thank you for adding that. Roxy, speaking of Space Cafe podcast, now our listeners are very much drawn to everything that is going together with space and space travel. These days are seeing a new, perhaps a new space race that's building up on a new level. The cards are being laid out on the table in a completely new way. So is that something that's inspiring to you, or would you rather say, no, let me still stay on Earth? Or is the ongoing space orientation also something that concerns you?
I think space is an area of unprecedented innovation, and I think that we can abstract some of that to problems on Earth. For example, we need to really zoom out to understand what we can do differently and what we can invent in an entirely new way. And why not look at space where there are no resources and where everything you need to use, you need to bring there, and you want to really do more with less. So it's fundamentally rethinking what we are doing. And this is exactly what we need on Earth as well, if we want to handle the resources we have available. So that, I find that very, very inspiring and very challenging. And I love to see technologies and ideas transferring into on Earth problems or solutions.
If your superiors came up to you and told you, hey, Roxy, can you design a space station, or can you build a moon base or something like that? So this would be something, this would be a challenge that you would be totally down to challenging yourself with, right?
Absolutely. Anything that hasn't been done has no precedence, is complicated, and is trying to solve challenges. I'm up for it.
By the way, the International Space Station has been around for quite a while now, and space tourism is becoming a thing. So you could all build spaceport. Be a logical next step to think in those new directions, right?
Actually, we've done that already with a lunar habitation with ESA and with the Mars competitions with NASA.
Can you tell us a little more here? Wow.
Let's talk about Mars then.
Yes, totally.
NASA has brought out competitions for settlements on Mars in different phases. And Foster and Partners has participated in multiple of those stages and has also won a few of them.
Wow.
So we are really, really heavily looking into space and looking into how we can come up with new solutions and new ideas about construction that we then are able to transfer on Earth. Like, for example, robotic construction, robotic assembly is one point that can help us in remote areas of our planet, as well as in unknown territories like Mars, where we would, for example, instead of bringing heavy habitats there, why don't we try to use local materials and what we've learned about robotics and 3D printing to print shelters there? And why don't we research bones and skeleton structures that are flexible and solid at the same time and keep us up? Couldn't they do the same in space by being much lighter and using much less material and energy to create them?
Speaking of new technologies and what you have already learned about perhaps space research and your endeavors on Mars, is there something on the horizon when it comes to earthbound architecture that could be a game changer for how we build things or how we are accustomed to building things these days? Is there something essentially new on the horizon that we could all soon be seeing?
There's quite a few interesting thoughts. For example, if you look at all the timber construction, and if you then look at how forces are moving through a building, and that those forces are not the same everywhere. So why do we put material everywhere if we only need it in certain places? And if then the building, wherever it may be, if it's on Mars or on Earth, where then a structure would be much lighter than before, so you could save 80% of building materials here or there while using new technologies, which are enablers to achieve this. So we try to use materials that are responsible to use, that are local, and using new technologies that enable us to give them performance or shapes or designs or manufacturing capabilities that they didn't have before. So it's really bringing something together. And this is also where I see space architecture and on Earth architecture have the sweet spot. Yeah.
And perhaps even converging, that the space architecture, as you're saying, on Earth architecture, somewhat come together because both places require similar means and ways of thought and construction.
And also it needs to provide a human-centric space where the human being has a healthy shelter, which is as important on a space station as it should be in all of our spaces on Earth.
So what do you think? Are we already in a place where we are ready to reclaim our place in life, to finally leave the object-driven world behind? I think it's time to refocus on what's important and perhaps reformulate a new form of humanism.
Maybe I would answer it from a urban scale perspective. That is very personal to me. We've seen cities develop around the car. We've seen cities develop around highways, around junctions, around manufacturing. But we have in a long time not seen them evolving around the human and around communities of humans and around the social human being, which now also this sort of crisis brings all this local, small-scale community back, right? So I think, as in everything, we need to claim our space back we need to claim the streets for us mm-hmm. or for children or for other activities than just driving a metal box around, right? So I see that as a sort of evolutionary process. It's been established like that, but now we sort of need to actively mm-hmm. claim that back because no sort of privilege has been given up voluntarily by someone who had it previously, right? So we need to sort of be really aware of what is good for us and for our communities and try to push for that. And that's where I see a sort of urban literacy of everyone. Mm. It's not the architect, it's not the city. The city is ours, yours and mine and everyone's, and we need to have an opinion.
Mm. You know what's funny about that? We have to go back in history to be able to find the future.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Because, I mean, like before our extensive use of vehicles and, as you mentioned, metal boxes, our cityscapes were completely different. If we take a look at the medieval villages in Italy.
And we all love them, right? All pull out the pictures when we look for inspiration.
Yeah, we all love them. We go there.
To experience something, we could build our own,
isn't that strange?
Right?
We pay to go there, and we could have.
That's a good thing that you say that. I never saw
isn't
it
that
like
strange?
That. It's very interesting.
And so I think it's your job as an architect and as an urban planner to bring back those times.
And to bring back the good experience in a city. You should not be frightened by cars or threatened by noise or pollution or anything, but it should be the good experience for the user should be in the focus. And that's sort of what I'm really interested in, physical space and also the space between the building, the emptiness in the city, the fabric, if you... that the human is interacting with, because every experience is happening on our eye level, and human bodies need stimulation to be healthy and to be active and all that. And that's what a city should provide, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So how long do you think will that take to, so that we get into a situation where we can reshape the way we live? Does it take a century? How long will that take?
If you consider that buildings are around for a long time, we might be luckier when we want to change the urban fabric in between, because this is a space that we have access to and that we can hack, or we can play different things on rather than just parking. I mean, what kind of activity for humans is parking, right? Mm-hmm. So we wanna have the experience, and we wanna curate this experience, and we wanna curate community. And maybe that starts with us, like you and me, being active and proposing change, or just doing things, just put your chairs there, put your desk there, and create this experience. We've seen fantastic examples previously in Vienna when the parking lots were transformed in outdoor seating areas for restaurants. Suddenly the experience has entirely changed, and it came out of let's just do that and see what's happening. And I think we are now in a time where we can just do things and then try to keep them if they're good.
Absolutely. And we have seen during the COVID-19 lockdown that many things did change for the better. Just an example, I live in the rural outskirts of Vienna, in a beautiful, beautiful city south of Vienna. And
where do you live, Markus?
In Baden.
Oh, wow. That's very beautiful.
It's a beautiful place, and it's the green lungs of Vienna. And usually we do get quite a bit of traffic, but during COVID-19 with no traffic, for the first time I had the opportunity to experience a moment how the world has been before the advent of cars. And that was a very special moment in time, not only for myself. So from one moment to the other, it was possible to change things for the human experience and well-being. So that was interesting. So my question to you as an architect, because I mean, like, architects also have a political motive and motivation. You guys want to change things. You want to initiate dialogue. So my question to you would be, how can we keep up the positive momentum that this situation we're experiencing right now brings? How can we take that as a positive momentum and help transform all the things we didn't like before?
I like that very much, because I tried to say before that this urban literacy is very, very important, and we need to be aware of not only passively experience the city, but also think about which experience we like and which experience we don't like, and how we could make tweaks in increasing our satisfaction with where we are. Is that more benches? Is that more green? Is that more cycling? Is that? And we need to be vocal about that, because the cars have a lobby that is very vocal to their advantage, right? We as urban dwellers, we usually don't have something like that. And right now that we met so many new neighbors during this lockdown and so many new people on the street that we've been sort of sharing the city space with that we haven't met before, we need to make use of what we have just achieved for our little lockdown situation, but we need to sort of try to keep this momentum and try to keep this relationship and speak out about what we want. Because on the other hand, a city, if they get all those requests, they can say, oh no, we need to do something, because thousands of people have been asking for that. But if nobody is asking, nothing is gonna happen. We've seen that for decades, when we thought it's never going to change and the cars will always occupy the inner cities and the parking lots and all that. But now we've seen, like you, we've seen and experienced how fantastic it is if it's different. So in the moment, we sort of embrace change and are part of that change and impact, we are making a difference. And I totally think we should reach out to people representing us, but also just do things. I'm a very big fan of just give it a try, see how it works, and move on and evolve and learn from there.
Wow, again, super inspiring. Thank you so much, Roxy, for that. Because it keeps dragging us out of our passivity, because yeah, over so many years we've been accustomed to living a complacent life in a complacent environment. But again,
we're too busy to fly around to focus on what is so close to us, yes, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. If we move back to space travel, space life, space living, how do you see the generation of humans that is alive at the moment? Is this a generation that is starting to leave Earth? So take, for example, the 15th century when humans first started to venture, not first, Columbus wasn't the first one, but let's say Columbus was officially not the first one, but he was the first one to discover America, because Leif Erikson has done it 600 years before him, but he was forgotten and Columbus got all the glory. So he sailed out into the unknown, was a very, very brave person, as was Leif Erikson, of course. So is this a similar moment we're experiencing right now, where we are venturing out into the unknown to discover a new world and then stay in that world for good?
I personally would love to venture out of Earth and see Earth also as a whole from distance, because I think that even probably even more shows the fantastic bigger picture of what this planet is providing us, especially considering on a global scale, there are no borders for climate change. There are no borders for melting ice caps. There are no such things as borders which we experience down here. But if we zoom out, things are different. So I would totally love to venture out and see that. I could not yet imagine to stay out there, because I imagine outer planets being, you would live in an encapsulated space, in an encapsulated world on a different planet, which you could not really venture, as I understood. I'm not a space expert, but I understood like you cannot really yet explore and venture as freely as you could on Earth. So that experience would sort of definitely draw me back. But also maybe I would be even more fearful fighting for protecting our planet, because I've seen it from distance and I've seen sort of the other side of another planet that is maybe not as green and not as lively as ours is. So maybe that could help people embracing what planet Earth has. And also maybe we can learn, have better technologies, better satellites, better data on climate to adopt our behavior, our buildings, our cities, make them more resilient after we've seen other places, or we can transfer technology and knowledge.
I think it's super relevant now to remind us of that beautiful, as Carl Sagan called it, the pale blue dot moment, when I don't know, was it Voyager 1 or Voyager 2 turned around and took a photograph of Earth, and that photograph was just a pixel on the screen in a beam of light, a beautiful, compelling image. Carl Sagan called it the pale blue dot, and it showed all the fragility and the smallness of this world we're inhabiting right now, where you and myself are speaking right now, where our listeners are listening to that podcast right now. This is this teeny weeny pixel on a screen. And I think in order to remind us of this planet we're taking for granted every single day, we need such a new moment, perhaps, such a new pale blue dot moment. And the big question is what that moment could be, in my opinion.
That was a very, very good moment. And especially, we should not forget that we are sensory animals. After all, we have different senses, like smelling, and we need to touch things. We need to touch one another. And is that really something we can already recreate in space? Will this satisfy our senses, our visual connection with nature, with natural light, with circadian rhythms? Will all that work for our complex and sensory-driven bodies that are waiting for stimulation all the time? We want to feel the air. We want to feel the noise. We want to feel the windiness outside. Can we feel all this in space? I'm really curious.
Absolutely. I think there's lots of space for adaption. But I think, and this is the feeling I have, that we will experience that moment as a society still in that generation of humans that is alive right now, because cultural evolution, meaning technological, scientific, societal evolution, is speeding up at such a rapid pace that I do think that what we're experiencing at the moment is just a precursor of what's to come in the next 10 to 20 years. So if all goes well, 2024, we'll see humans on the moon, whoever those humans will be it either Americans or wherever they will be from. But to see humans on the moon, back on the moon again, will perhaps for the first time trigger what has been planned for many decades now, to stay on the moon for good and build the moon base we all grew up with. As far as I'm concerned, I grew up with Moon Base Alpha 1. That show was called on television. That was super compelling. So perhaps we are in the situation as a society, from a technological perspective, where all this can finally become a reality, and where foster and partners will play a role. How do you see that?
Well, I think we are in as good spot as you can be to tackle that, having collaborated with NASA and with ESA and having a really, really deep engineering background. I think we would love to investigate how it is to stay for longer. And I would be the first one to want to experience that. Always with a ticket back, but at the moment, would you go for good, Marcus?
Well, that was a very good, I was going to ask you that question, but thank you for asking me that question. I don't know. I would consider myself a geeky person. I'm always for everything that's new and that can be tried out. But I think I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't be the first with no return ticket for multiple reasons. And I think the most important reason, of course, is that I'm a father of two kids. I'm married. And that does play a role. That does play a role.
If they would want to come.
To be super honest, Roxy, but I think the same issue that you were just mentioning holds true for me. As long as our otherworldly shelters are not larger than a tin box, I think I will take a pass on this one. Before we are not able to terraform on a large scale, I think me and my family will wait and let the brave take over. Perhaps we have a different opinion about what life and explorations is all about, but I have the feeling that a tin box life is not worth living for me yet.
I think that's one of the key questions when we talk about space travel and also planning architecture and structures and infrastructure in space. How do we create a desirable experience there?
So, Roxy, this was a super fascinating discussion. Thank you so much for your time and your inspiration.
Roxy, it's Space Espresso time. It's a tradition we do here on Space Cafe Podcast, and it goes somewhat like this. Without much preparation, what is your favorite thing, idea, or thought when you think about space? Off the top of your head. Go ahead.
I'm thinking all the time since I'm very young about mobility and about how we move. And I've been thinking so often, like, how I would shoot myself up somewhere, either on another planet or just up like a bird. Or I think about how we move and how we move to space and how this whole experience could be a way more pleasant than what I imagine it is now. And I imagine it's not being much of a challenge, but I'm really curious to see where space travel. I'm a big, big, big deal traveler. So I would love to see this.
Wow. Okay. So, and this has started like when you were a child?
Yeah, I always loved anything that is moving, bringing people somewhere, that is traveling, that is how we move, in which speeds, what you see at different speeds, what you experience at different speeds. So I would love to, that's why Wonderful. I would love to make the journey.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Roxy. Okay, dear listeners, this has been a wonderful show. If you would like to learn more about Roxy, about Space Cafe podcast, please do go to Spacewatch Global on the internet, www.spacewatch.global. Here you find all the information. And we do have, as you know, a fortnightly newsletter packed with all the information of what's going on in space travel, and everything that goes with that topic. We do bring you all the information from all over the place, from all the remotest places on Earth, and everything that goes together with space travel, even when it comes to the one guy who set up shop in Pakistan to set up a space agency. And we promised to bring you that person on the show in the future. So if you have something you would like to share with us, please do leave us a message on spacewatch.global. And other than that, Roxy, I think it's time to say goodbye to our listeners. And thank you so much, guys, for listening.
Thank you so much, Marcus. I really enjoyed our conversation today. I have to say that what I said today is my personal opinion and does not necessarily fully reflect the views of my employer.
Sure, sure. I think he's not going to rip your head off.
You never know.